D1, number 21A.
Today I want to talk about the development of the method of practice. And when I do that, I don't do it just because of love for history, but because usually that which has evolved in spiritual consciousness through centuries is usually a way and an order which is also right for the development of the individual, so that individually somehow we go through the same ordered development in regard to treatment, practice, method of treatment. It is recorded that somebody asked Mrs. Eddy if she could name her a Christian Science practitioner. And Mrs. Eddy's reply was, "I cannot advise you regarding a Christian Science practitioner, but I most earnestly request that you select one who knows Christian Science history." This is quite important to see that she felt that somebody who would know Christian Science history would also be a better practitioner. History is always that which is a great help, because when we can look back retrospectively from where we have been coming, we can somehow better see where we are right now, and therefore also get the right perspective to where we are going in the future. Therefore, let me just state the big periods of the method of practice. And as we do that, let's see that behind that development of the method of practice lies really the Christ idea, the impulsion of the Christ idea coming to human consciousness and enlightening human thought to an ever higher and higher practice in spiritual things. So what we are witnessing is not just human history, but it's really the development of the Christ idea precipitating itself on human consciousness, so that human consciousness gives way to the ever higher sense of practice. For the simplicity of this talk, I want to make some order by putting the development in some periods. First, the period which I may call the pre-Quimby period, the formative period in Mrs. Eddy's thought. Then second, the Quimby period, which was a great challenge between mind and matter. In healing. It's always in regard to healing. Then third period, the discovery which she had, and therefore her endeavor to identify to herself the method of practice. Then came a fourth period which we can see, the period of argumentation, where she translated really her highest sense of practice to the lowest sense of practice, but adapted to the student. Then perhaps a fifth period, when the period of argumentation melted over into the Kimball period, where we can see the period of idea versus matter. Then a sixth period, perhaps the Bicknell-Young period of the oneness of being without science and system, and seventh, then the John Dorley period, the oneness of being with science and system. So let's start with the first period. This is not, don't try to find behind it some deep metaphysical order. It's just a way of classifying our thought a little bit so that we know where we are. So let's first see the pre-Quimby period in Mrs. Eddy's life, the formative period for practice. And we see in her life right from childhood always two components, namely the religious component and the scientific research. All right back in her childhood we see the religious component where she healed herself of a severe fever through prayer. So she knew something about the power of prayer in healing sickness. Then when she was 25 years old, very young really for that time, she began to investigate medical science. It was her scientific research for healing. First she searched allopathy, then very soon saw that this couldn't give any answer and turned to the investigation of homeopathy. And this was a very important step in her development. She writes about this period, "I had been tracing all physical effects to mental causes." So we can see her research, her scientific research, was now to trace back physical effects to mental cause. And through homeopathy, she could see how it is possible to mentalize the drug, and that the drug becomes much more like the human mind. We can see the reduction of matter to mentality. She said that she could see that mortal belief instead of the drug governs the action of the material medicine. The less matter, the more mind does the work. The drug disappears in the higher attenuation by which matter is reduced to mortal mind. So when she began to see that really there is no healing power in the drug, but that mortal mind, or mind small m, is a healing factor, she put up that axiom, the less medicine, the better, and metaphysics adds, until you arrive at no medicine. And we know how she relates in the textbook and elsewhere her healings with those unmeditated pellets, with what we call today placebo. So she got quite a good insight, really, in the mental power of what was called material drugs, until finally she saw that really mind, small m at that time, mind, not matter, was the healing factor in medicine. While she was using homeopathy with great success, healing quite astonishing cases. At the same time, again, the religious element was still alive and was foremost in her heart. It is related round about 1854 that she healed through prayer a very severe case. In her unpublished work, Footprints Fadeless, she writes, "In the 50s, Mrs. Smith, so-and-so, came to me with her child whose eyes were diseased, a mass of inflammation, neither pupil nor iris discernible. I gave the infant no drugs, held her in my arms for a few moments while lifting my thoughts to God, then returned the babe to her mother healed." So we can see that those two components, of religious healing and mentalizing drugs, scientific research into the power of matter and finding that matter has no power to heal but that it is mind, that these two constituents were constantly in her mind and were working together so as to bring religion and science into one method of healing. Foremostly, she always felt in her heart that really God should be the healer of every disease. And this brings us to the second period, the Quimby period, which was that great challenge between mind and matter, which one is the dominant power. We know that in 1862, Mrs. Eddy was very ill, went through a hydropathic cure, and heard of Quimby, and she made every effort to visit him and to be treated by him. And finally she went and was, to a great extent, helped by Quimby's method of treating disease. What was Quimby's method? It is that he wetted his hand in water, then rubbed the skull of the patient, and while rubbing the skull of the patient, argued for health. It was what Mrs. Eddy calls magnetism. He had some advanced views on magnetism. For Quimby, disease was just a false belief mentally entertained. And so we can see now that she was introduced by Quimby to recognize that disease is not a reality, a material reality, but a false belief mentally entertained. Up to that point, she only could see that the drug had no power in itself, that it was mortal belief in the drug that could heal, like in homeopathy. Now she learned from Quimby's method that disease itself is not a reality, but just a false belief mentally entertained. But for Quimby, matter was real. We mustn't forget that. Matter was, from Quimby, as real as spirit. And sin and sickness were for him also real. So he had a method to try to rule out a material reality, a disease reality, by a stronger belief in reality, in health. Therefore, this magnetism consisted in arguing the patient out of his belief. The healer argues the patient out of his false belief. When asked, but how this could be possible, Quimby couldn't answer. He didn't know the modus operandi. He didn't know the principle lying behind it. And he was quite frank about it, and therefore he never taught a pupil. Because he didn't know the modus operandi, he couldn't teach it, but it worked. He had an enormous practice and healed quite a lot of people. God didn't enter into his argumentations, nor into his way of thinking. The Bible gave no hint for Quimby how to heal the sick, and so his treatments contained no divine influence. So we can see how much, really, Quimby could give any hint to Mrs. Eddy about the method of healing. Very little. But at least she could find out that disease is a belief mentally entertained. And we hear that Mrs. Eddy, who was most interested in Quimby, discoursed quite a lot with him and was very much interested, that she herself healed at that time with Quimby's method. She says herself, he helped me at the time, and I treated successfully cases that he failed to cure, but returned home not healed myself. In her inward attitude, she felt that Quimby didn't have the answer. She tried to interpret into his healing method a biblical reasoning and a divine influence, though Quimby himself wasn't interested at all in the Bible and in her interpretation. So in her heart, she nurtured that she would find a higher method and a real method which would put spirit and not matter into the focus of spiritual healing. She writes about that inner attitude between that period, between Quimby and her discovery. She said, the mental virtues of the material methods of medicine, when understood, were insufficient to answer my question. She came to the point where she felt even a mental interpretation of the material method wasn't the final answer. I must know more of the unmixed, unerring source to gain the science of mind, the all-in-all of spirit, where matter is obsolete. She says, human reason was not equal to it. The divine mind alone must embrace it and be found the principle. For spirit to be supreme in demonstration, it must be clad with the divine instead of the human power. So we can see at that period something in her was longing and waking up or expecting a solution which would show that it is the divine influence and not the human argumentation and the human influence which would heal the sick. And so we come to the third period of Mrs. Eddy's discovery of Christian Science. And this is quite an interesting period because we can see here that she couldn't see right from the beginning the answer to her discovery and the answer of the modus operandi of healing. We know that she was healed from a very severe accident, that, as she said, she was already walking in the valley of death, that when she asked for the Bible, read the healing of the palsy in Matthew and was healed, rose, dressed herself and was free. But what has happened? She asks herself now, what has happened? Shall I just say it's a miracle or shall I investigate it? You see now the scientific strain in her didn't leave the miracle as a miracle, but wanted to see the law behind the so-called miracle. And what she says about that period is, I could not then explain the modus of my relief. She couldn't. I could only assure that the divine spirit had wrought the miracle. That she knew. I had learned that mind reconstructed the body and nothing else could. See, that was an experience where no human argumentation, no human influence was at work. And so she could see, oh well, then this must have been the divine working, the divine spirit, mind constructed the body. How it was done, she goes on, the spiritual science of mind must reveal. It hadn't revealed yet, but she knew it must reveal. It was a mystery to me then, but I have since understood it. because all science is a revelation. And so she tells then how, step by step, she gained the certainty in science that all causation is mind, capital M, and every effect a mental phenomena, and that this led up to the demonstration or to the proposition that mind is all and matter naught, as the leading factor in divine science. But in order to find out the modus operandi of this proposition that mind is all and matter naught, she withdrew, searched the Bible, and in that solitary research in the Bible, she found the answer to her discovery. The Bible was my textbook. It answered my question as to how I was healed, but the scripture had a new meaning, a new tongue. Their spiritual signification appeared. So only through spiritual sense and spiritual interpretation of the Bible, she began to understand what really had happened at the moment of her healing. She could see that Jesus' healings were no miracles at all, but just the effect of a divine law which he understood, so that she could write Jesus was a natural and divine scientist. At that moment now she touched the science of healing. And that period between 1866 and 1875, those 9 years, were really those 9 years of searching the method, the modus operandi of healing. At the beginning, right at the beginning, in the first half year, she had that wonderful vision of mind is all and matter naught as the fundamental proposition. But then it took her about 9 years to find out how this all mind would be the healer for this so-called phenomena called matter. She says, I knew the principle of all harmonious action to be God, and that cures were produced in primitive Christian healing by holy uplifting faith. But I must know the science of this healing. When one is asking how Mrs. Yeddy healed at that time, then she gives the answer that she healed through spiritual power, through the influx of divine truth. And she said, I healed without outward signs, without manipulation, without outward methods. And she says that her healings were instantaneous healings. In Footprints, Fadler, she says, at that date, its advanced propositions were not fully lucid to my own comprehension. And it was 9 years after my discovery of the Alpha of Christian Science that its vast problem was solved and sent forth in Science and Health, published 1875, containing the principle and practice of Christian Science. See how she shows time and time again that she could heal with the divine spirit, the influx of truth, instantaneously, without any outward sign, and yet she couldn't explain step by step the modus operandi of healing. She says in 1896, as late as that, she says, I have not yet reached the ultimate practical proof of absolute Christian Science, and may never reach it while remaining visible to the personal senses. But I have written it, and my works teach it. She herself felt, even as late as the turning of the century, that she has not yet reached the point of demonstrating absolute Christian science, though she knew that the Divine Spirit, the descent of the Holy Ghost, had put it into science and health, that science and health would contain it, though she herself would not yet be fully aware of it. But her great problem at that time of that period, 1866 to 1875, was how on earth then can I teach others how to heal spiritually? She could heal spiritually, but she didn't know the modus operandi, and therefore how on earth can I teach spirit to the students? So, she says, at that time, the method of practice for students perplexed me. The method of practice for students perplexed me. Although I healed through spiritual power, the divine influx of truth, students could not be taught up to the silent, effectual prayer that casts out evils and heals the sick. Till what? Till they received the unction of the Spirit. So, what she had before her was really, how can I teach spirit? A preparation of the heart for the individual consciousness is requisite. So at that point she saw, oh, at the end of my endeavors will be to convey to the student the spirit of science. But in order to reach that aim, there must be stages and states of development which would prepare the heart of the student up to that consciousness which is just flooded with the Divine Spirit. So, she says, I began by appealing to the student's higher material sense of spiritual being, to the higher material sense of spiritual being. We can see the low level which she began to touch, just to ask the student to have a higher material sense of spiritual being and healing, and then to their higher spiritual understanding that all is mind, whereby and wherein all material conceptions and material means of healing are futile and silent. Invisible prayer is found to reach the ultimatum. Even the assured demonstration of the divine power of God to heal the sick.